But we can't.
That's what a lot of these people out here are about. A lot of we even know sex drive.
Hi, I'm Eric.
I'm Brittany.
And we are For Color Nerds.
The conversations that white people have.
That white people have? White people be having conversations that they have. The conversations that
white people have and black people are in the room are like Donald Trump's platform.
Yeah.
The conversations that black people have when white people are not in the room.
Yes, but we record them and put them on the internet.
Yes, because we are real.
Yeah. Keep it 100.
man, you know, I'm just out here. Honestly, like, I'm like the fucking Destiny's Child song.
So good?
I'm doing so.
That song's
so good.
I'm proud of myself for being able to, have the reference.
So good. Yes, that is, for those who don't know, that's from Destiny's Child album, Writing on the Wall.
That's cool. What are we talking about today?
Today we're going to talk about our alma mater.
Yeah.
Which is Latin for other mother. Yes.
I actually don't think I knew that.
Yeah, no, I'm here. Yeah, that's the thought. The thought is that you leave your family home and then you go to this other place, your other mother, that kind of teaches you, like finishes molding you into the person that you're going to be.
I'll say that's yeah, all surprisingly that old accurate.
White people, East Coast, Latin, Ivy League, Seven Sister, bullshit.
But before we get to that.
We're a little off. We know we were off last week. We're late and shit. We know.
Yeah. And apologies for that.
Yeah, and I mean. I had a lot of thoughts because we didn't record last weekend. So any thought that I had, I wanted to tell you. I saved it. I put it in a notes file.
Yeah.
One of them was, hold on.
I was about to say, I still don't know this because we didn't talk.
I know. Well, no. I'm going to give you the best piece. Maybe I'll give you the rest of them at some other point in time. But things to tell Eric. I'm glad we both got Fitbits the same week.
Yo, I love my Fitbit. Shouts out to Fitbit.
Shouts out to Fitbit.
If y'all ever want to sponsor the show, I got some good stories.
Between the fact that I didn't know that I wasn't sleeping until I started using you guys' sleep tracker, and I didn't know that my resting heart rate was as low as it was, which was surprising. Additionally, I'm getting a little the pod bod, which on one hand is cool because like it makes your boobs bigger gaining weight. But on the other hand, like, trying to, you know what I'm saying? I got a couple years till I turn 30. I'm trying to moisturize my situation, tighten up, preserve my sexy. And the Fitbit, when I do actually decide to begin exercising, is going to come in handy.
Yeah. I mean, now that my mom is gone, I'm like slowly dropping weight. Like, well, actually, not slowly.
All them chicken quickly, and pinto beans.
Right? Yeah. Oh, man, I was in heaven.
I was so jealous.
But I'm straight on that. It's all about the sleep. The sleep tracking is amazing, though.
It's helpful to know.
Because you now you're much more cognizant of like what you need to do before you go to sleep. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this is like, what are we doing?
Look. All I'm saying is the most important thing that actually I had in here. I hate having braids. But I look so cute in them. Is this the meaning of bittersweet? Just thought I had.
First off, let's talk about Britney's relationship to braids. Britney is so fake that Britney hasn't had braids longer than like 2 weeks.
First of all,
in her
3 weeks.
Life. Oh, excuse me, 3 weeks.
3 weeks, okay.
You made it 3 weeks. Your head is so tender. Like, that is sad. I remember Brittany was sitting at our house, could barely blink.
This was the
blink.
First time I had braids.
You could barely blink. You couldn't like
furrow your brow.
Like,
I couldn't. I was moving from waist up like Barbie. Couldn't move my shoulders. Couldn't move my arms.
It was like you just got Botox. I was like, what is wrong with
Botox
you?
Botox on my entire body.
She was just sitting there in pain. She was like, yo, I just can't do it. I just can't do it. Yo, is this like, I don't understand how people go through this. We're sitting there like, yo, you got to chill.
You asked me, you said, why did you, you're like, well,
why did you do that to yourself?
And I said, to be cute. And it was cute. I look cute with braids, but like, I don't know what it is. I feel like everyone else in the free world gets braids and they live their life. And for me, it's like, I might as well staple a farm animal to my head because that's how comfortable it is for me to have fucking braids.
You got to commit. Be like channel Melissa Ayers Perry.
I don't know how she does it. I don't know if people are putting Novocaine on their scalp or what.
You know, after time, whatever it is, you know, what will be, will be.
No, like, I was like complaining. I actually, someone very close to me in my life told me that he was going to make videotape me giving a sworn statement that I would never get braids again. Because it was literally like I had them and I did not stop complaining the entire time that I had them. But they're so cute on me.
I'm glad that you're somewhat past your braids phase. This was almost like, this was like the time you used to tell me all the time you're going to go to like the, is it the like $60 weave store?
Oh
like
my God.
Get no, a $60 wait. Weave?
Wait.
Is it, how much is it?
It's $50 weave shop. That's what it is. Because I'm going to the $50 weave shop. They had locations in Southfield, Michigan. I think they had another one in Detroit, but they might have just been in the Detroit area. They had a couple in New Jersey. I think they might have one in Atlanta. I can't remember. $50 weave shop, for those who don't know. First of all, had the Fire theme song on their website.
It's the end of the show.
I know. This is the
last
the $50 weave shop. The reason why it's so cheap, because this is the thing, for the people who don't know, weave is an expensive process.
Yeah.
And so you
it's
have
time
to,
intensive, right?
Time intensive. You have to wash, blow dry your hair. You should probably trim it, put it in cornrows. Then you have to have, you have to also buy hair, which can be, you can buy hair off the internet, or you can go like to like a spa, like the people
or
who really
Fulton
know what they're
Street.
Doing. Like, or go to Fulton Street, or just collect strands that you see passing in the wind. if you live in my neighborhood, but you or you could go to like a specialty place that like sells human hair and like go and like get the right color blend so that it mixes well. And you and then you have to get them; they have to make the tracks, or you can order the tracks fully done. Then they have to take a special hook, like a hook needle, and then like sew them into the cornrows around your head. And you, maybe you get a full thing. Maybe you're just getting like a partial, I don't know, maybe you're just, you know, leaving out the U part, I don't know. But weave is expensive and it's time intensive. So with the $50 weave shop, and this could be something that's like upwards of $500 easily.
So they've optimized this process.
Right. What you do is you come in with your hair already blown dry, like blown dry and trimmed, which you should be doing. And then what they do is they cornrow, and then you come with your own weave. And then they just sew it in. So like a person very close to me.
Yeah.
I will not say who they are. They don't. You know, I'm not going to tell their business.
I was going to say, tell the truth, shame the devil.
No, I'm not going to do that. But this person did go to the $50 weave shop. I don't know if they want me to put their business out. I don't know if they care or not. But, yeah, and they had a good experience. This person had a good experience. But, yeah, they when you went to the website, if you wanted to get them a salad, it was $90, which is still super cheap. If you went to the website, as soon as you get on there, because I'm going to the $50 weave shop. And that was what it was.
I just remember we used to talk about this shit all the time. One,
because I've always wanted to have a weave. I have not the patience or the scalp.
Brittany has well, clearly you don't have the scalp. But Brittany has always, like, always, you always worn, like, relative, like two styles. I've seen you
up,
like, straight
down.
Hair. Yeah.
Yeah. Up, down.
And so, like, you just always talked about, like, getting a weave. And I was like, yo, like, one, when we were at Howard, it's like, yo, it's not like... Like getting a weave is like some special shit. Like you can
not
throw a fucking stone and hit like six people with a goddamn weave. Like, what is your?
But all
problem?
Weave is not created equal. Some people's weave is a mess. You know this. You know this. You know this. You know this.
But anyway, that just reminded me.
Yes.
Like, what the fuck is happening?
But yeah. Anyway, I can't have braids. I'm not allowed to. So I look cute with them, and it was nice when I was on the road. It was nice to have braids and not be thinking about what my hair is to look like. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I have the hair of like a Bichon Frise. It's very thin, very fine. So like, even when I had the braids, after about like 2 weeks, my actual hair just starts coming out of it and like feathery little pieces. No, other people's hair somehow stays better. I didn't even. Yeah, and like the braids just come through, and like my hair just is. It's not cute. Wow. Anyway, but you know, enough about me. Let's talk about Howard University.
Yes, let's switch. All right, so.
Take it to the house.
We're going to take a little journey before we actually start talking about
it. All right, go ahead, Eric.
All right, so, I mean, it's no secret.
No.
That the students today, mm-hmm. black students today, mm-hmm. are witnessing the amazing advances and progress that, well, relatively amazing advances and progress mm-hmm. that our grassroots protesters, you know, our friends, our family, and the Black Lives Matter movement mm-hmm. have been able to enact, you know, in terms of being vigilant, being committed to not standing for this bullshit that we call, like, dealing with America.
Uh-huh.
And so anyway, students all over the country have been, you know, seeing this and realizing that, hey, I mean, there's nothing necessarily stopping me from enacting these same types of methods. So we've seen that in the protests at University of Missouri, Mizzou. Mm-hmm. We've also seen this at Yale. Black students, they're like, and also other students of color, too, are like, yo, we're not putting up with this bullshit anymore. Yeah. So in them standing up for that, there has, sadly, they've been met with almost equal vitriol, like in terms of, yeah. you know, racists coming out the woodwork and, you know, threatening their lives, you know, shouting racial epithets, like you name it, you know, mm-hmm. same old shit from the 60s coming back to a certain yeah. degree. And the response to that has been interesting in terms of, like, I mean, you got a lot of different people who have feelings about, you know, whether, like, to the degree that students should protest and stand up for what they look to believe. And mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, that's not something, I mean, clearly, you know, our position on that, like we are in full support. But in addition to that, there's a lot of question of, like, safe space. Not question. There's a lot of talk of about safe spaces and whether or not HBCUs are positioned as a safer space mm-hmm. than predominantly white institutions. And HBCUs have kind of really, like, there's been a lot more talk about historically black colleges and universities
yeah,
than in the past, like, 2 months. Yeah, than what we've seen in a long time. Like, BuzzFeed has actually recently done, not necessarily connected to this, but surprisingly well-timed.
Yeah, yeah.
They just did an awesome series on HBCUs that, you know, looked at, like, a variety of different topics and issues and mm-hmm. had some awesome pieces come out there. Shawna Hillstone was also, as part of that, Shawna Hillstone was also on yeah. Another Round, yeah. which was awesome. They yeah. talked about HBCUs. But basically, people have been talking about HBCUs and the issues that people, that their students face. And can that be, like, is that where we should be going if you're black to, you know, to feel included, to not have to deal with, you know, these potential issues that are happening or the landscape of the environment that's happening at predominantly white institutions all over the country? So that's been happening. And then there was an article on Gawker, a piece, an mm-hmm. essay. It came out, like, a couple of weeks ago by Jared Loggins. And the title of this is The Safety Myth About Black Colleges.
Provocative.
Yes. And positioned right under that is Howard's wonderful library.
Oh,
God. Oh, yeah. And the, like, yard. And a picture
yes.
of the yard.
In the clock tower.
Yeah. This essay's contention is that, you know, it's a myth that black colleges are the safe spaces, are these, like, amazingly safe spaces or this utopian environment for black people.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes that assertion, excuse me, mm-hmm. it makes that assertion based upon the fact that HBCUs have issues. One of the biggest, if not the biggest, is their lack of attention, protection, and inclusion of LGBT people, in addition to the fact that a lot of times their money ain't right.
I mean,
an approach to just general administrative processes are flawed at best.
I was going to say messy. Flawed at best sounds a lot kinder.
And initially when I read this, and to frame, Brittany and I have made no secret of the fact that we went to Howard.
Yeah, we've mentioned a couple times.
Yeah, you know, and we are, I think I would say we're proud bison.
I would say so.
Definitely. At the least.
At the very least. Yeah.
And my immediate reaction to this, I puffed up my chest a little bit and I was like, well, hold up. You know, I got a little, like, mm-hmm. testy, and I was like, well, wait. And then, you know, as what I would recommend most people do, I took a step back and, like, I reread and I was like, well, let me read this again. Let me actually, like, you know, process this a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, there's some points here, you know, like,
yeah.
And so, you know, then as I normally do,
uh-huh.
I I opened up Slack. Sometimes it's G-Chat. Sometimes it's iMessage.
Well, now we're super underground now. Now we got Slack. We got a Slack channel.
So I popped open Slack, and I sent you the link, and I was like, how you feel about this?
What did I say? I don't even remember.
Well, your
response precisely, I don't remember what I said, but yeah, I know what I generally said.
Your response was surprising, and in terms of it, your immediate response was surprising, I would say, as you didn't have a puffy chest moment. You were like,
yeah.
You're like, this is about right.
It's kind of accurate.
Yeah, it's kind of accurate. You were like, you know, I don't want to speak for you, but you said you had a lot of issues while at Howard. Yeah. And after you saying that, I was like, well, yeah, I had a lot of issues. Why? And, you know, I started thinking about it some more, and I was like, well, damn. So I think today we want to kind of dissect that a little bit, because I think it's a useful conversation.
Yeah.
And I think we're uniquely positioned.
I would agree.
Having both attended an HBCU.
Yeah.
To discuss it.
Yeah.
So I would love to hear if you could talk a little bit more about your experience at Howard, Brittany, and how you can identify with the fact that this particular article had some points.
I love going to Howard. I would say the most difficult year that I was there was the very first. And yeah, after the first year that I was at Howard, I wanted to actually transfer to another school because there were a lot of things that I didn't like about going there. But then I thought about transferring to, University of Michigan, or I don't know why I act like there was another school I was going to transfer to.
Yeah.
I thought about transferring to the University of Michigan, and then I thought about, this is where my older sister went, and I spent a lot of time. My older sister, she attended University of Michigan, like, when they were in the middle of their Supreme Court case about affirmative action. Mm. And she was one of, like, the lead – she led the charge, basically, for the black students at University of Michigan. And, like, me and my family spent a lot of time taking the buses, from Ann Arbor, Michigan, missing school and stuff like that, to go down to, D.C. and, like – stand on the steps of the Supreme Court in the middle of wintertime because my sister was like, and I think about how remarkable it is that she was like 20, you know what I mean? Yeah. 21, like that's what she did.
Sadly, probably that's like not surprising to me.
Not at all. Yeah. But like that, like, so I think I thought about that and I thought about what it was like where I grew up, which I've gotten into in other episodes before. And I was just like, you know what? Even though the problems that I had with Howard were real. I thought that it was a super misogynist environment. And I thought that, I couldn't necessarily put this into exact words then, but my general feeling was that, if you were a straight black man at Howard, then, it was a perfect place for you to be. It was, I felt like a lot of the things at Howard were, catered to fit, that type of person's lifestyle.
Yeah.
And I just wasn't, I know that I can be kind of a pill at times, but I really like for things to work for me. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? You've met me before.
Yeah.
And that wasn't working for me. And so I didn't really want to stay there.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt like everything around me was kind of working. And also, I was like a teenager. So the way that I felt, there were some valid feelings beneath that. But also the way that I'm wording this, keep in mind, I was 18 and 19 at the time. But I felt like everything around me was just everything around me bent to the will of black men between the ages of 18 and 24, straight black men between the ages of 18 and 24.
Which is troubling.
Right. Which is troubling. And I kind of was just like, I'm not feeling this shit. But all of that said, when I actually thought about going to Michigan with them white people, who probably were not going to be any different than the same white people that my sister had to deal with when she was there in 1999, 2003, I was like, you know what? I'm actually going to stay right now.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to kick it right here. I would say almost at every single level of the organization from I don't want to go into too much detail because I don't really want to put people's business out there.
I think you can allude to things. I mean,
there were people at I would say on professorial staff, mm-hmm. on administrative staff, on a student level, who behaved toward me in such inappropriate and ridiculous ways. But the culture of the university supported their behavior. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
Yeah.
And honestly, that That's very similar. Even though I would say my experience, the result of my experience, or some of my experiences were similar to, even though they were obviously very colored by my existence as a straight black male. Initially, like when I was first looking for schools, like Howard was honestly it was always Howard.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I stepped onto campus at like, I think I came up here on like a trip with my mentor and somebody else who was also who would eventually be coming here. And I was like, holy shit. Whole bunch of like, you know, immensely like intelligent black people all just sitting around talking about smart shit and being black. Like, I'm there.
Cute too. They were all cute.
Everybody's fresh. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm there. You sign me up. So, you know, and I got here, and I would say probably my first year, I was just so afraid that I was gonna flunk out, that I didn't really talk to nobody. I was kind of like, I'm just gonna do my work.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was chilling. Second year, that's actually when we met.
We met, yeah.
You know, I was feeling life a little bit.
You were feeling yourself too.
Yeah.
And your little polos.
That's fair. That's fair.
Addicted to Eric A. story. Addicted to polo.
I was a low life.
Yeah, I know. You were in a Facebook group literally called Low Life.
Yeah, straight up. But
Eric used to call himself Fitch, like Abercrombie and Fitch, because he thought he was real preppy and fresh. But please continue.
Anyway, but as I continue my time there, my matriculation, I started to see some seams. You know, the way I was an RA, and as an RA, you know, you have to open your mind a little bit, because you're now responsible for everyone, you know, on your floor or in your dorm. Mm-hmm. You're responsible for their well-being. You know what I'm saying? You're there. You exist to help them have a great time at college.
Yeah.
Or to at least help them have a safe and productive time at college. And that was an extremely important experience for me, because even though, you know, normally when you get to college, you're like meeting everybody, and you're like, oh, I want to know about you. But that's very, you still make choices there in terms of who you decide to get to know.
Yeah.
And a lot of times that those choices of who you decide to get to know can be very selective based on your past history. But
same, you need to be as specific as possible.
So like, I mean,
like you choose who's familiar to you.
You choose who's familiar
okay,
to you.
There you go.
You naturally like, I mean, I was a straight black man. I want to know every other straight black man. I also want to know every other straight black woman.
You did want to know that. I do know that about you.
But as an RA, I really like, you know, my job was to get to know everybody on my floor.
Yeah.
And I was exposed. That was the first time I really, you know, had deeper conversations with men who are gay, you know, and that was the first time I really got to know them. And that being open to that really helped me advance a lot of my thinking and realize that, like, yo, some of the shit that I was exposed to as a kid was kind of fucked up. And also a lot of the way that, you know, the relationships at Howard, way people interact, is also kind of fucked up.
Say more about that.
Well, going back to this article, you know, in high school, the worst thing you could be was gay. And I don't think that's a surprise coming from the South, you know, but the worst thing you could be was gay. If somebody called you gay, it was like, you know, it was literally the worst thing somebody could say about you. And so, you know, a lot of, like, there was no, because of that, there was no incentive to understand what comes behind that, you know, to understand somebody's experiences, what goes that you just kind of stayed away because you didn't want to be associated with it. But as I got to Howard, I realized in some ways that it was a similar space. Not to say it was the worst thing, but if you didn't want, if and this is, again, a very like this is a straight man's perspective, but you had to kind of limit how close you were with people who were gay, or else it could be assumed that you were. And that was strictly within the context of your relationships with other black men.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because obviously, of course it would be.
Yeah.
And as an RA, I'm like, yo, what the fuck? Like, this was ridiculous. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is ridiculous. And, you know, and you try to, like, also as an RA, you try to promote that type of thinking. You start try to say like, hey, you know, let's make sure everybody's like getting to know each other. Like, yo, you got to kind of chill out. Make sure you're open to new people. You know what I'm saying? Not just open to like, oh, I'm going to get to know people from New York and I'm from the South, you know, vice versa. But there are an amazing amount of perspectives here and everybody here has an immense amount of value. You know, talk to folks. Like, let's get to know folks. Let's, you know what I'm saying? That's why we're here. So I saw like that. And then also, in addition, the way like something that you spoke to is very true in terms of how being a straight black man is very preferential.
Talk about there's a word that I know that you're about to introduce into the conversation. I'd like for you to say it now.
The ratio?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So it's no secret that in general, in most college spaces, there are more black women than black men.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of talk and discussion of the ratio at Howard.
The actual ratio is something around 2-1. Yeah,
2 or 3-1. But I've heard
No, because it's 66% women, 33% men, 2-1.
Okay.
Right. People will tell you when you get there.
It's like 8-1.
15-1. I remember being like, look, I'm not good at math. If there were 15 women for every man.
Yeah.
It would be like 95% women.
Yeah.
Which is, so that's inaccurate.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. But it's definitely.
The perspective on the ratio is crazy.
Yeah.
And because of that, being a black man at Howard, you like it. I don't care what you look like.
It doesn't
like,
matter.
You don't matter. Feel like you're midnight.
You could be Calvin from the McDonald's commercial.
Exactly.
And you feel like you are midnight.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, you immediately are, like, it's like you're stepping into the juju of Idris Elba, Denzel. Like, you're just walking in this legacy.
No, and the crazy part is I don't know if we talked about this in a previous episode. Maybe we did because I can't remember. But, like, when I started attending Howard, like, the first thing that your female RA tells you when you're a girl. Because the other thing is that we should also mention Howard has this other thing called visitation.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is one of the most immature and damaging things that they do.
Yeah.
That a lot of HBCUs still do, which is they separate people by gender. And you have to like
you they regulate how you can interact in the dorms based on what is supposed to be like almost like a merit based system.
Yeah, it's like a merit based system. Like if you act up, you can get your visitation taken away. And visitation means that like you can have you can have someone of the opposite sex in your dorm or in your room. Unless you're in the Ebony Sex Palace, aka Meridian, which is now closed, RIP, because I definitely
like,
had a good time in there.
Down.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, unless you're in like a co-ed dorm, which Cook was kind of a co-ed dorm, but it was still mostly for athletes.
Yeah.
That was its own thing. And then Meridian, which was
pop. Slow was co-ed too. Right?
That's right. Yeah, but Slow was a little more chill. Meridian was lit because Meridian was by Adams Morgan.
Yeah.
Yo, I had a good time. But most of the dorms are separated by gender, and like they regulate, like you said, how you can spend time with people of the opposite sex, which basically means like they want to keep you from having sex because they're afraid that like your image, like the
pregnancy, sexually transmitted infections and diseases.
Yeah,
like,
but my thing is like if you're old enough, like when do you, like you're gonna regulate that the entire time that I'm in college, and then expect me to go out in the world and then be able to handle myself?
Yeah.
And sort of, it's like not your job, it's not your business. It made me feel really infantilized and really irritated as a woman, as a young woman, to have my sexuality, because it wasn't really about no STIs. It was really about girls getting pregnant and leaving and going home early. And like, I didn't even think it really had to do with the university so much as the shame. Do you know what I'm saying? And almost like, it was almost like a, hate to bring this dude's name up, but like a Bill Cosby and Ben Carson-y kind of like, we're going to keep you girls from getting pregnant by regulating the time you can spend with these dudes. And like that also made like sex and sexuality this very like, it was
skeezy.
Like, yeah, it made it skeezy. It made it coveted. It made it secretive. It made it, and like all the things that you don't want sex to be, because that's when people are like, they're less educated about it and they don't want to talk about it and they're less apt to use protection. They're more apt to have sex at like the very desperate little intervals that they get, and like hated that shit. But like visitation and the ratio were very closely intertwined because like going back to when I first started talking to my RA. But my RA was, I think she was a junior. She was like 20 and I was like 17. I just got into school. And the first thing that she talks about, she's like, so, you know, there's a ratio. And if you're a light-skinned girl with a mole over your left eye, and you talking to some dude, don't get it twisted, because of the ratio, the very next day you can see him walk around campus holding hands with a different light-skinned girl with him, also has a mole over her left eye. And it's just like, that was the thought. The thought was like, and I almost like appreciate in a really sad way.
Yeah.
Like that ratio at Howard, and we're not going to get into this because we've vowed as a partnership never to like talk specifically about this. But like the idea of the ratio and the scarcity of like, of the scarcity of like of the possibility of like a straight relationship, straight yeah. black relationship, that exists at Howard, like also is kind of like exists in like the actual world.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I don't want to get too deep into that. I'm kind of almost grateful that they were so harsh with it, though, at Howard. Like, I was 17. I think about that sometimes. I was like 10 years ago. Yeah. I almost want to cry thinking about the fact that like the first interaction that I had with like dating.
Yeah.
And with like the social dynamics of like being around a ton of other black people at once was kind of like, your value is iffy. Yeah. Your value is it's iffy. It's negotiable. We're not really sure if it really exists.
Irreplaceable.
You're totally replaceable. Like that's the first idea that I had about myself as yeah. like, you know what I mean?
And it's a built-in system based on this bureaucracy to a certain degree.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like that idea, like even though that's like we're just talking about dating and sexuality and that, like that extended into classrooms. And yeah. that extended into I was a film major, so I was in a mostly male department. And it was like I don't want to get into too much detail.
There's another component to that, though. It's not like there's another component to the ratio and why that's significant. And also why it places a certain degree of preference to being a straight black man.
Mm-hmm.
There is, and this is something we have talked about on the show.
Yeah.
In terms of there's a perspective that black men are. It's a much more dire situation for them, and we are in need of a lot more yeah. attention and special care.
Yeah,
And that's something that also translates to the college experience.
Yeah,
and how like you say, your professors will relate to you. Like, you know, I can sadly say that there's definitely some like situations where, you know, I've gotten looked out for, like
yeah.
you know, because of the fact that. Well, it's not too many of y'all here, you know, like,
yeah.
you know, we need to make
shuffle
sure.
You through, yeah.
Yeah, we need to make sure, like, you know, you're getting through, like, it's important. If you're trying.
That's enough.
That's enough. And it does not exist the same way for black women.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I mean.
Or even, you know, queer
no,
people.
No. Hell no. And the other thing is that, like, the women would look out, too, which is, again, that's, like, also a whole other conversation that also exists in the real world. But, the female professors and administrators would look out. For the boys there. And, like, I yeah. wasn't getting the same shit. I mean, and on one hand, like, I can't necessarily go someplace and expect to be coddled. But I wasn't necessarily expecting to be coddled. But, like, coddle this motherfucker who ain't doing shit, who's copying yeah. my work.
Yeah.
Right? And then turn around and have a private conversation with him about, like, is Brittany copying your work? Is she kind of writing? I had a professor ask a male classmate of mine if we were sleeping together and also if I was writing his coattails.
That's deep.
I don't even know if I can leave that in, but it's the truth. This shit happened.
So, yeah, like that, and that's a scenario that translates outside. Like, it's a perspective on being black and the dynamics between being a black man and a black woman and being
yeah.
a straight black man and straight black woman.
Yeah.
You know, that exists outside of the HBCU experience, but it definitely is probably a lot more concentrated within that environment.
I will say, though, it does say something about white people. It does say something about white people that I was like, I'm gonna stay in this scenario rather than attend the University yeah. of Michigan.
Well, I mean, I think, yeah. So, but before we get there,
yeah. yeah.
So, like, in addition to that, there's one other thing that I think is also significant, and like, it also is very much related to the type of protests that we're seeing
mm-hmm.
right now, and I think it's important, and that is the administration's responsibility to the students.
Yeah.
And so how the administration relates to its student body is obviously extremely important. And
yeah.
that manifests itself in a variety of different ways. It starts with, you know, simple things like, you know, your access to school services,
mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of even like financial aid, healthcare, but then also to things like safety,
yeah.
you know, like campus police.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say that like, I mean, the reality is there are definitely issues like that, you know, at, to be straight up, at Howard specifically and a lot of HBCUs all over the country.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of times, sadly, I don't necessarily want to speak to any of the reasons why, because I don't think we have the depth there.
Yeah.
But there are issues. There are issues. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not surprising to meet a lot of really fucking stressed out people around the time that folks are supposed to get their financial aid clear.
Yeah. Yeah. You
know? It's not surprising to meet a whole bunch of really stressed out people around housing.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And they're like you can get accepted. They can tell you that you have a dorm room, just to clarify, because people may not know.
Oh, yeah.
And like, you can show up on campus and then
you ain't got no place to stay.
You ain't got no place to stay.
And, you know, not to say that you were completely asked out, depending upon, like, if you and this is definitely relevant at Howard. I don't know. You know, I imagine it's probably real at a lot of HBCUs, mm-hmm. and probably some predominantly white institutions too. But if you had a certain amount of like get up and go,
yeah,
you know, you could talk to the right person who would make sure something happens.
Yeah,
for you.
But you have to have the right amount of get up and go.
You have
and
to
you
know.
Also have to know the organization too.
Exactly. And so like a lot of like for me, a lot of being at Howard was really getting to know the process.
Yeah,
getting to know what type of actions I need to take that would generate the results I need across the administration, across like my access to services. And
yeah.
Things there. So, you know, at Mizzou, at Yale, people like black students are responding to the administration's lack of attention to the services that they need to mm-hmm. feel safe,
mm-hmm.
To feel included.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that HBCUs do struggle with. In addition to the fact like this essay specifically pointed out to including and yeah. providing safe spaces for LGBT people on campus.
Yes.
So. That said.
I mean, it's like, it sucks because something that keeps crossing my mind whenever we have these conversations is like, on one hand, like, I'm almost glad that like I had that experience, and like that's how they sell you on it when you first start there is yeah. they're like, you have to make 2 or 3 copies of everything. The great thing about Howard is that you learn how to
you learn how to exist in the world.
Yeah, I mean, like I will say, like both of us, I say have a pretty good ability to get up in the morning and know how to get a nut. Do you know
yeah.
what I'm saying? Like we know how to
be sitting out here broke.
No. And like that, and like I mean, like, God bless my parents. They tried to work with my little raggedy black ass when I was a little teenager, but I was a little spoiled brat. And going to Howard kind of was like,
nah.
All right, you got to figure it out.
Yeah.
And like definitely it was a good finishing school in that way in many, many senses. But like I really like to think that there's a way that like, and I know that there's tons of other black folks who went to HBCUs who feel that way. But I want to strongly believe that there's a way to be able to get that same result without having to, like, have my education and my well-being, like, mentally or physically be, like, in peril.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For, like, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years straight. Hey, you know, gotta be real.
And, I mean, and the thing is, the reason why, in spite of these things, the reason why we are such fierce advocates for Howard is mm-hmm. not just because it's where we spent some extremely, like, beloved and crucial years.
And tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is the fact that there is a built-in safety around the foundation of blackness as the norm.
Yes.
That you cannot.
You can't get anywhere else.
Get anywhere else. I can barely explain it. You know, like, I talk to people and they're like, yo, like, were you just, like, swimming in, like, blackness as a kid? Like, and I'm like, no.
I sure as fuck
you know,
wasn't.
Like,
yeah.
I was into pop culture, but I had no ability to really process what I was seeing or being exposed to.
Yeah.
Like, I had no context for it.
Yeah.
Going to Howard exposed me to a variety of different black experiences.
Yeah.
And made it pushed me to be more of a student of my own culture.
Mm. Okay.
In a way that, you know, I know for a fact, had I went to a different school, I would not, like, have had that. I would not have had that push. It wouldn't have been built in to my experience. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that every black person who goes to Howard Mm-mm. is able to tap into that.
Yeah.
But it is definitely there and available if you can figure out how to access it.
Yeah. Access it in a way also that's going to be like comfortable and safe for you. Because that was something that I definitely had to struggle with. It was just like, I couldn't, for a variety of reasons, some that I've gotten into and some I'm probably never going to get to. If you catch me in the street, I'll talk to you about it. But like, I'm not going to necessarily get into like on this type of like record.
Yeah.
But like, I did have to do a lot of shifting and a lot of adjusting and a lot of like just assessing whether or not people or different relationships, different friendships, different, you know, social circles were going to be healthy or productive for me. But I still like even so like I think I tweeted this after when I shared the kids article was in Jared Loggins. It's like Howard University is like going there is deciding to go to Howard is the single most important decision that I've ever made in my entire life. I would not be in this room. I would not be employed by Gimlet. I wouldn't know you if I hadn't decided to go. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, but still going to Howard stressed me the fuck out. And I had to like, it took me years to be able to kind of like calibrate myself.
Yeah.
To kind of be like, okay, like I'm a person in the world and like I feel normal. Like I loved going to Howard, but going to Howard stressed me the motherfuck out.
Yeah.
And like, it's not to say even that you can't be a black person and have like a valuable like learning experience or growth experience at a PWI, but like you say, it's almost like you can't explain it. Like being someplace where just like I didn't have to worry about that, yeah. Not having to explain shit, not having to like it just gave it. I've said this before, but like the confidence that it has given me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, same.
The confidence that it has given me. It just in the fact that like I know myself. I know my history. I know where I came from.
Yep.
I know what I'm worth. I know who I am. And like in this way that like you could put me in any environment and that shit doesn't change. That shit is immobile. And yeah, I mean, it's not like I said, it's not to say that like you can't gain those things. You know what
Somewhere
I mean?
Else.
Somewhere else. But like, goddamn, like Howard University gave that to me in a way that like, I mean, like I can't describe it to you.
And I think, you know, in addition to like... While Howard and other HBCUs would like to sometimes think and sometimes overestimate their commitment to academic excellence, you know.
Shots fired. Okay.
I'm just saying, like, let's yeah. be real. That really is, like, that's like the number two of what they sell. You know, if you
yeah,
think about it.
Yeah.
Like, if you really
yeah.
think about it, that's the number two of what they sell.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, there, you know, I would say some, you know, Some curriculum paths are better than others there.
That's a good way to put it. That's safe. I like that.
But, you know, when you sit in orientation, when I sat in orientation or pre-orientation, actually, you know.
Love Howard.
On Somebody the first fucking, day.
Yeah.
You know, they frame your experience. They frame what's happened to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, being open to all the different ways that things can have happened to you.
Yeah.
Whether,
I guess I see what you're saying.
Whether you are, if, you know, if you come from the diaspora.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. All the myriad ways that can look.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? They're open to that. They're saying this is a space where you can dissect that mm-hmm. freely. You know what I'm saying? Where you can look at how, like, you can look at it in hindsight. And mm-hmm. you can look at, you know, potentially the future and yeah. how you can affect that future.
Yeah.
That is a big piece of what they sell. And I think that. That is some, again, that's another thing that you cannot recreate somewhere else.
No, you can't recreate it somewhere else. But what sucks, I don't know, it sucks even that, like even though you can't recreate it, like a student at a PWI should still be able to have
yeah.
a space to retreat to every once in a while that feels like that.
Totally.
And, like, these kids don't have, also another thing I was reading, like, HBCUs take up 3% of our nation's 3,000 colleges and universities, and, like, something like 96%. Of black college faculty, like tenured faculty, are at HBCUs.
That's not surprising.
I know, but it's like, isn't that a terrifying statistic?
Yeah.
Like over 90% of tenured black professors in the nation are at HBCUs, which represent 3% of our colleges and like it represent 3% of our institutions. It's like obviously like they can't It's like the same thing. It makes me think about HBCU, like why a student would choose an HBCU. Like part of it is that you're not. Yeah, exactly. Like part of it is you're not welcome. You know what I mean? I can only imagine like any of my friends who spent any time in academia. So and like that's a whole other fucking issue. That ivory tower shit's a whole other fucking issue. But like so much of research and like why you get published or whatever, where you get tenured has to do with like. Just racist ass bullshit. People policing your language. People saying that your research is not important. Not being able to get funding and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's just so mind blowing to me how PWIs are so ill equipped to support Black thought at any fucking level.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, obviously, there's some Black folks that end up HBCUs because that's where they could get a job, which is also fucked up. But also, like, I imagine there are a lot of faculty that choose to teach HBCUs beyond the fact that they want to give back to our little feeble minds. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, and the other thing that I want to frame here is that it's not like people, you know, it's not like students at HBCUs are just sitting in it like chilling. You know what I'm saying? Like there has always, as far as I've known, like, you know, if you talk to the folks who graduated before you and even like myself while I was there, students who are rebelling against the administration to create the type of environment that, you know, is more inclusive, does combat, you know, the sometimes significant and extreme misogyny that is built in within, you know, within the university, you know, the homophobia, the transphobia, like there are students and student movements, you know, across HBCUs that are trying to combat these things.
Yeah.
And it seems like, you know, along with the growth and extreme visibility that, you know, that Black students at predominantly white institutions are receiving, that, you know, Howard students and other HBCU students are receiving that same type of attention as well. If you look at Take Back HU and a lot of other student movements, you know, to say like, hey, look, you know, we're not just sitting in this shit. Like, you're going to fix some things. You're going to address some things. Mm-hmm. That's extremely important. And I think that that will continue. But I just, to almost like come back a little bit, I want to frame that like safe space is like it's relative to a certain degree, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like it can be subjective, but I do think that HBCUs are a safer.
I was going to say people talk about safe sex or safer sex. No such thing as safe sex.
Yeah,
but there is such a thing as safer.
Are a safer environment than predominantly white institutions for Black students and, like you said, Black thought.
Yeah,
Black experience. You know. And that's something that I think is important to be, like, it kind of needs to be said. And having been, you know, having come from Howard, like, I feel confident in saying that. And I don't know a ton of people that would disagree.
No, I don't think I know any.
You know, so I do your research.
Yes.
Talk to people and... I'm also curious about, I mean, do you have anything else you want to, like, throw out there?
No, like I already said earlier, it really goes to say something about white folks to say that despite everything that we've discussed in the past hour, I still was like, you know, I don't think I need to attend one of the top tier schools in the country, possibly the best public, like, the best public institution that our nation has to offer. I was like, I'm going to skip Michigan. I'm good.
Yeah. Like, I mean... Honestly, like I, you know, I did that summer program at Harvard.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, can't wait to school start back in the summer.
like, ooh.
Yeah, this Lord. Is deep, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was going to say no shade, but.
A little shade,
you know. There's, I mean, I think it's pretty clear. It's work to be done in a lot of places.
Yeah. But I think obviously, like, y'all know that Black folks are putting PWIs on notice, like, as we speak, which I think is a beautiful thing. I'm so happy about. Because as much as I believe that HBCUs are necessary and vital institutions, I also believe that Black people have the right to exist fucking anywhere and do whatever the fuck they want to do.
And to feel safe.
Yes. And to feel safe. Exactly.
Feel like their thought and their work and their contribution to academia is valued.
Exactly. Valued and valid. Like, I think that black people deserve to exist wherever they want to exist. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm so glad. I'm so glad.
I went to Howard U.
And not a white school. We should actually call the episode that.
Yeah.
The entire long fucking title. I'm so glad I went to Howard U and not a white school. For those of you who don't know, there's this beautiful song. We should actually, I'm going to cut this part out. We should close the episode with it now that I think about it. Right. With the marching band. So, so it's a beautiful song. I'm so glad I go to Howard U. And if you attend any Howard event, it could be like the quad step show. It could be, you know, homecoming game. It could be a basketball game. It could be anything.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sing it for you. But basically the lyrics are, I'm so glad I go to Howard U. I'm so glad I go to Howard U. I'm so glad I go to Howard U singing glory hallelujah. Because everything is a Negro spiritual at the end of the day. Singing glory hallelujah. I'm so glad. That's the song. And when we sing it after, you know, I'm so glad I go to Howard U, we say.
And not a white school.
And not a white school at every single event.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
It's a beautiful thing.
And, you know, like I said, all this, like I think as much as I love Howard, I think part of loving something is you got to kind of, you know, you got to kind of wrestle with it. You got to be critical. Yeah. You got to be real.
You get me right sometimes.
I do try to get you right. You get me right sometimes. Same. In different ways.
It's give and take. Exactly.
It's give and take.
You know, part of loving somebody is telling them when they're wrong.
Yeah. I think James Baldwin had a quote about that actually wasn't too far from what you said. Mm-hmm. But yeah, basically. I think it's good that we got this off our chest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you have any questions, as always, feel free to reach out to us.
Yeah. Keep them emails coming. Keep them
tweets.
Keep
the emails coming. Colornerds@gmail.com.
Yes.
In addition, reach out to us. Also, leave a review.
Leave a review. Rate and review. I thought you were going to say something. You said that like that was some new shit. Like you were just giving a new concept out.
There's this thing.
Yeah. So just, you know, reach out. Reach out and touch. Touch us through social media. We're there. But that's really everything that I had on my spirit today.
Same. So, all right, y'all.
All right. Have a good week, you guys. And happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Eric and I are going to be together on Thanksgiving.
Yeah. I'm excited for this food.
I'm excited for the food. I'm excited for the crowd. It's going to be a good crowd.
Your family has a good culinary tradition.
Which is? Oh, we cook.
Food. You cook.
Oh, thanks.
You have
good food. Yeah, we do have. I'm going to be real. Not everybody does.
Your family has good food.
But like, we can legit, we got it.
So I have no worries.
Yeah, I'm excited. The meal is going to be good. Peanuts coming. Yeah. Carla's coming. I've got some other very special guests. Should be an interesting mix.
All right. Yeah. Let's do it.
All right. Well, happy Thanksgiving, you guys. And, you know, we'll holler at you soon.
Bye.
Bye.